Session number 21295, Rule 1.
Colonel McFetridge, Rule 1. Where were you born, please?
I was born in Cork, in the Republic of Ireland.
In a village?
I was born in St. Patrick's Hill, Cork City.
Which year was this?
In 1913.
How did you come to join the army, please?
I joined the army from the Royal Military Academy, Woolwich, in August 1933. And I came before that from Cheltenham College, which was a great training school for the army.
Why had you wanted to join the army in the first place?
I think from the age of 13, when I first went to Cheltenham College, which had a military and engineering side, I chose then to be on the military and engineering side. I also did have military forebears on both my mother's side and my father's side. And I think the profession had a natural attraction for me.
So, which regiment did you go into? Were you commissioned into?
I was commissioned into the Royal Artillery in August 1933.
What kind of experiences in the army did you have between 1933 and the outbreak of war in 39?
I spent the first, I spent until 1937 in the UK with a short break in Egypt when Mussolini invaded Abyssinia. I then served in an anti-aircraft battery in Egypt and the UK.
What unit were you in when war was declared?
I was then serving in 6 Jacobs Mountain Battery at Nowshera on the northwest frontier.
And what rank and role did you have at the time?
I was a lieutenant.
How did you feel about the news that war had been declared in Europe?
Well, I was in an extraordinary situation because I was the sole British officer in the battery from September to November 1939. I was very occupied because I commanded the battery alone by myself, and the effects were immediately felt because the major was taken away, the captain was on long leave in the UK, and the other subaltern was on a course. So I felt we were in for a very long haul because we were very unprepared.
What kind of equipment did this unit have?
It had the 3.7-inch howitzer, which served us in Burma well, and which indeed served the Indian Army very well over 50 years.
Can you tell me about the kind of men you had in this unit?
It was a custom of the Indian Army and Indian Artillery to recruit men of a different class, such as Muslims, preferably Punjabi Muslims, and Sikhs, or Jats, Dogras, both Hindus, in the same battery. I actually commanded the Punjabi Musliman section of two guns.
What was your opinion of the kind of men you had under your command?
Oh, well, they were really absolutely exceptional. To think from two gun detachments and the drivers, three of these men went on to be awarded military crosses in World War II, and the Sikh Naik, whom I had, went on to be one of the best known generals of the Indian Army. The men were really the cream of professional soldiers.
Were there any problems in handling these troops?
I cannot recall any problems, really. It seemed always that the Sikh Viceroy's Commission's officers and the Punjabi Musliman Commission's officers were always able to solve it, and I'm sure many problems did not come to my notice.
Did you feel any sense of dismay about the declaration of war?
No, I didn't. I was very much a professional soldier, and I had watched events from over the last 2 years. I think I expected war.
What conditions were you living in Nowshera?
Well, they were reasonably comfortable. And we did enjoy such luxuries as the airmail edition of the Times, and we got that within 48 hours. But looking back on it, it was rather Spartan.
Did the war affect you at first?
It affected me because I had greatly increased responsibilities. I was a sole British officer. I commanded the battery for about 2 months. And I'm pleased to say that after 1 year, I very suddenly received the pay of a major for those 2 months.
What do you remember happening to you next?
Oh, I was disgusted because I was posted to a subaltern's vacancy at our Mountain Artillery Training Centre, which was, of course, a centre for the training of recruits. And it was a pretty good come-down from commanding a mountain battery.
And then?
Well, from the MATC, I escaped after some 6 months because there was a shortage of experienced subalterns in the mountain batteries, which engaged in operations on the frontier. And I was posted to 13 Dardoni Mountain Battery at Rusmuk.
Can you tell me about this unit, please?
13 Dardoni Mountain Battery was one of four batteries in a mountain regiment. Two batteries were at Rusmuk, of which 13 Dardoni Mountain Battery was one. And two batteries were at Wana. And they were constantly out on road protection. And sometimes out for periods up to a month on showing the flag to the people of Waziristan.
Was it similarly equipped to the other mountain batteries?
Yes, the four mountain batteries were identically equipped. They had four mountain guns each and 112 rounds per gun.
And the men you had here?
The men we had here, batteries. All the batteries had one section of Punjabi Muslims, and the other battery had a section of Ahirs or Punjabi Brahmins, both Hindus. And this seemed to work perfectly.
What kind of operations were you conducting from Resmac?
Well, I can remember one column, and it was I had been switched to command 15 Jhelum Mountain Battery because of the sudden illness of the battery commander. And I arrived in the early morning to take the command. It was alongside us at Resmac. And by that evening, a Sikh company of a Punjab regiment had been overcome, and the colonel had been killed and was beheaded. The company commander was killed, and there were about 57 Sikhs killed and 57 Sikhs wounded, and very few survivors. And that was an experience indeed for me.
What did
and this operation was on a column to Taudachina, about 15 miles from Resmac.
Were you concerned? Were you there when this happened?
Yes, I played a I played a leading role. I was the battery commander with the rear guard, and the rear guard always faced trouble because you had to extract the men from the pickets guarding the guarding the route, and there was great trouble when it came to calling back this Sikh company who had already suffered. And somehow, Pathans had occupied the feature they were on.
What did you personally see of the fighting?
The fighting was mostly over the summit from me, but I was the first person, I think, to know of the gravity of it, because it had been closely observed from the gun position perhaps 1,000 yards from me. And the gun position, I can recall a signaler on a horse riding up, and he, in front of the infantry commanders, handed me a short message from the gun position officer, and this read that there were enemy occupying the picket on which our troops were posted.
So what action did you take?
I consulted with the rear guard commander, who commanded the Hyderabad battalion, and it was agreed that this Pickett must be retaken, and he committed a company of his own battalion to retake the hill. I decided that my place was to stay with him, because after all, there were 5 more miles to go to Todachina camp, and there could well be further trouble. And I sent up with him a Viceroy's commissioned officer, whom I met for the first time, with signalers, and they were there for the night. I'm pleased to say that the company of the Hyderabad regiment who assaulted the hill, and they held it overnight. They were magnificently led by a jemadar who was awarded an MC, an immediate commission. This was a pretty dramatic event for me, because it was the very first day I had ever commanded a battery during operations. And I was then a substantive lieutenant.
Can you describe what your battery did during the action?
Yes. The company from the Hyderabad regiment did extraordinarily well, and on arrival on top of the hill, the colonel of the Punjab regiment, who was later to lose his life, he told the jemadar that it was essential to hold a feature on the hill. And he successfully captured this feature, and he dug in for the night. I regret to say that the VCO, who was on the ridge, perhaps he had no option, but he had to retire. During the night, I shelled repeatedly the feature on which the Hyderabad regiment was, and it was very fortunate that none were killed, but the enemy suffered severe casualties.
Did you see any of the casualties from either side?
Yes, I saw our own casualties brought in, who were invariably Sikhs from this company, but I saw no casualties of the Pathans.
What kind of wounds had the Sikhs suffered?
Well, the Sikhs, many of them had been ambushed, apparently trying to retreat, and they had terrible knife wounds. Some of them had, showing that there had been very close fighting. But there were relatively few that had apparently died from rifle fire.
What was morale like in the column when this setback occurred?
I think this was an action on the frontier without equal, since a well-known action of 1935, when the Guides Infantry had suffered similar but less casualties. And this was quite one of the biggest setbacks on the frontier for years. It received little recognition because this was 1940, and events in the Middle East under Wavell commanded more attention.
How did you feel about the performance of your own battery in the action?
I think that it was very good. They move back, leapfrogging. I always had guns which I could fire. And the fire was very good, and the discipline could not be better. There was a very fine Punjabi Musliman at the gun position, Alam Khan, who stood 6'6" in his full dress, and he held the troops together magnificently.
Did your unit take any casualties?
No, there were no casualties in the battery. And I saw next day, when we went out, I saw an RAF Lysander brought down by accurate rifle fire from the Pathans. It was a pretty stunning sight to see this Lysander crash to earth. So the Pathan was to be respected as a marksman.
What happened to the pilot of the Lysander?
He was killed outright.
From what kind of positions was your unit firing during the action?
Well, we were firing just off from the positions, just off the road, and really there was little choice, usually, because they leapfrogged one through the other for the distance of about 5 miles. But during the night, they were up all night firing defensive fire to support the company under Jemadar Umrao Singh of the Hyderabad Regiment.
Which year did this happen in?
This happened in December 1940.
Was that your first test of action on the frontier?
No, because I had already been in Rusmuk for 9 months, and I had seen several minor affrays, but they were very minor compared to this.
How did you like being at Rusmuk?
Well, I liked it for the reason that there was definitely active service. And also you must remember that we were engaged in a world war. And I was really chafing to see more of the world war rather than operations on the frontier.
What do you remember happening next after Tour de China?
Well, I at that moment suddenly received another posting that I was to go and raise the anti-aircraft training center, or rather I was to be one of the staff to raise the anti-aircraft training center for recruits to the newly raised batteries of Indian anti-aircraft artillery.
Where was this?
This was at Malaya cantonment, some 10 miles from Karachi city.
What happened to you there?
I was for a few months employed as a captain in the initial stages of recruit training. This training center was then being formed. And of course, officers speaking Urdu and with a knowledge of the workings of the Mountain Artillery Training Center were of great value.
What did you think of the recruits?
That the recruits were extraordinarily raw. They had to be taught right turn, left turn, quick march. But no doubt they ultimately became good soldiers. And indeed, I was to see this later in Burma in 1942.
What happened to you next?
in April 1941, I suddenly received an order. I seem to be always on the move, to report to Delhi with all my kit to the RA director for further orders, and I would proceed to a new posting. I did this, and I was met at Delhi Railway Station with all my kit by an officer from the Royal Artillery Directorate. He told me to my surprise that I would be interviewed on the following day by the Director of Military Operations, then Major General Schoons. I had expected, of course, to be interviewed by the RA Directorate. I was very surprised to find myself in front of General Schoons. I well remember the meeting. He went up to the wall and unlocked a huge map of the world. And he told me this, that a highly placed committee had recently studied as to which targets in India should be provided with AK-AK defences, anti-aircraft defences. And high on the list was a place I'd never heard of, Digboi Airfield in Upper Assam. And that I was to proceed there now, not in uniform, but in civilian clothes, and reconnoiter possible gun positions, which were later to be occupied by the newly raised Indian artillery. The recruits were then being trained at the training center at Malaya Cantonment. When he'd finished briefing me, he asked me whether I had any questions. And I said to him, yes. Who could the enemy possibly be? The Shirley Digboi was not within range of German or any other aircraft. Japan did not enter the war till December 1941, and here I was being told by General Schoons in April 1941 that Japan was the possible enemy. So that answers the critics who say that India was totally unprepared, when he that very morning was telling me what preparations were being made against a possible attack by Japanese aircraft. I then said to him, where are the bases for these Japanese aircraft? And he said to me, they have facilities. I think I can well recall he used that very word, facilities, on the airfields bordering Siam, such as Chiang Mai and Chiang Rai, and how true he was. And I then asked who I should report to at Digboi, and he said to the manager of the Burma Oil Company. And but he was unable at the moment to give me his name, but he assured me that the manager would be told that I would be visiting him. And so I was commissioned to proceed from Delhi wearing civilian clothes as long as possible, and to reconnoiter and to prepare for 1st Indian Heavy Attack Battery, which, when the recruits were trained, was to be formed and trained on the very site in Digboy. This was a quite extraordinary procedure by which raw recruits were deployed in action on gun sites. And that was due.